WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
People sometimes knock me or tease me for being a workaholic, but even with this new radio show, I'm pretty sure I've got absolutely nothing on Jorge Ramos. He's the co-anchor of the nightly news on Univision. He's written a dozen books. He hosts a Sunday morning show and a weekly news magazine, and he writes a syndicated column. I'm not even sure that's the whole list. For Spanish speakers in this country, Ramos is like Diane Sawyer, Bill Moyers, and Walter Cronkite rolled all into one. But Ramos has often been criticized for the way he approaches journalism. He doesn't pretend to dispassionately cover issues that concern Latinos. He is their advocate, and he wants to mix it up with people like Donald Trump. Staff writer William Finnegan recently published a profile of Jorge Ramos in the magazine, and he recorded this conversation with him from Univision's headquarters in Miami. They started right off by talking about politics.
Two Latino U.S. senators, Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, are in the national spotlight, running for president. Neither of them defends the undocumented. I've heard you say that you'll be thrilled if a Latino becomes president, even if it happens to be one of those two men. Isn't that complicated for you?
First of all, I have to say that I hope that at some point in my career, I'm going to be able to go to the White House for the inauguration of the first Hispanic president or the first Latina presidenta. Marco Rubio's parents, both Cuban Americans, were immigrants. The father of Ted Cruz is an immigrant. And many immigrants in this country cannot understand why the sons of immigrants in this country are not supporting other immigrants. And it is incredibly unfair and sad that these two politicians are closing the door or trying to close the door behind their parents.
Have you been shocked personally by the extent of Trump's appeal?
Yeah, I think we all are. I thought that the era in which we would see a candidate attacking immigrants openly and suggesting that it is possible to deport 11 million, I thought that era was gone. I just read a fantastic article from the Pew Research Center. They were saying that by 2055, and I'm going to be 97, and I don't even want to ask you, Bill, how old were you going to be in 2055, but I'll be 97 if everything goes right. By then, the white population will become a minority. And to suggest that you can rule in this country with only one part of the population, I think it is wrong and it isn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Many of our listeners became aware of you for the first time when Trump threw you out of a press conference in Iowa in late August for standing up and asking a series of questions and refusing to sit down until you got answers.
Okay, who's next? Yeah, please. Excuse me, sit down. You weren't called. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down. Go ahead. No, you don't. You haven't been called. Go back to Univision. Go ahead.
You cannot deport 11 million.
Go ahead.
Trump. You cannot deport 11 million people.
I was sitting directly behind you when that incident occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And I was struck by how calm you were,
down,
you know, with Trump
please.
Interrupting you and
you weren't called.
Snarling at you. And then with this bodyguard who was a huge guy manhandling you out of the room. You didn't seem nervous. You didn't raise your voice. Do you remember how you felt when that was going on? And also, what do you think the upshot of that incident was?
In terms of being calm and not reacting violently, well, you have to remember, Bill, that I've been on TV for more than 30 years. Of course, you get nervous, but I've been trained for 30 years to be on camera when those moments happen. I've covered very difficult moments in our national life. I was on the air for hours and hours on 9/11. And of course, what you want to do in those moments is to react emotionally, to cry, and to do things that you would only do in private. But I had to remain calm. And maybe because I'm also taking yoga, and yoga helps me. And with breathing, it's amazing what you can achieve.
Uh-huh. Speaking of people who shout and scream for a living, Ann Coulter's latest book is a tirade against immigration in general and Latinos in particular. I mean, she basically makes her living by saying outrageous, offensive things. And yet you had her on your show.
You've said that Americans should fear immigrants more than ISIS.
Yes.
Most immigrants are not terrorists, not criminals.
And I have a little tip
no
for
one, No one is biologically predisposed to commit a crime.
If you don't want to be killed by ISIS, don't go to Syria. If you don't want to be killed by a Mexican, there's nothing I can tell you. Very easy to avoid being killed by ISIS. Don't fly to Syria.
Are you really saying that we're talking about 40 million immigrants who
exactly.
live in this country?
I thought you were just disputing that.
No, no, 40 million immigrants who live, immigrants. I'm not talking about undocumented immigrants. Overall immigrants, legally here,
well,
and those who are not here.
To 40 million with
okay.
illegals.
Jorge, I'm sure you remember that moment. One of the things that was striking about it, for me, was not just the incredibly offensive thing that Coulter said, but the kind of silence that followed. I've heard you say that silence is death on TV. You know, you got to keep the conversation going, keep things happening, which I'm sure is a good rule of thumb. But in that moment, you didn't reply, and then Coulter tried to fill the silence. I thought it was so powerful, and the audience was so quiet. I mean, it was in front of a live audience, I assume a mostly Latino audience in Miami, and it was an amazing moment.
When I first heard her saying that, I thought of two things. First, I was honestly shocked that she was saying such an outrageous statement. And then at that moment, I made the conscious decision of not talking, of just staying silent, because it didn't matter what I would ask. It would be weak in comparison to what she had just said. So I let the moment hang. And the more that she would talk, the more outrageous and the more offensive and more out of place that it became.
Yeah, it was quite powerful. Do you worry that giving somebody like Ann Coulter a platform just increases the availability, even perhaps the acceptability of her far right wing and anti-immigrant ideas?
No, I do that all the time. I go to Fox News frequently. I invite her to talk to us. I just recently went to talk to Joe Arpaio. I think I've talked to him three times in Arizona. I am completely convinced that we have to talk with those who don't agree with us. That's the only way for them to get to know us, for them to know that we are not criminals, not rapists, not terrorists, and also to advance the idea that it is possible to legalize immigrants in this country, and that we are part of the United States.
There was a moment when we were in Iowa where we ran across Ann Coulter. She was there to introduce Trump. And you guys caught each other's eyes as we were passing, and you swerved, and each of you sort of gave a silent fist bump.
Yeah.
That was probably not your favorite part of my piece. my interpretation at that moment was that you guys were both working and that you were just saying hello, acknowledging each other. But it was striking because of the great political and personal differences between you. I mean, I doubt you guys go out and drink beer together. I could be wrong. Was my interpretation wrong of that moment?
No, I think what you described was exactly what happened. Mm. And what many people don't understand is that sometimes when you are on TV and you only have 5 minutes, not only to express your point of view, but also to attack your opponents and to try to defend your positions, you have no time to be pleasant right from the beginning. So the intensity that you see on TV, the confrontations that you see on TV, that's not real life. TV is an exaggeration of life. So after you do those interviews, they know that it is not personal. In other words, that I don't have any personal animosity against Ann Coulter or Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly. And at the end, we can have a normal conversation like two human beings. And no, we've never had a beer together.
You grew up in Mexico in the bad old days of the perfect dictatorship, the Revolutionary Institutional Party, known as the PRI. You worked briefly as a TV reporter there right out of college and had trouble with censorship and had to leave. But you came around as a Univision anchor and were able to interview Carlos Salinas, the president who was perhaps the most feared in recent times.
In Mexico, you can't do that. Salinas de Gortari governed from 1988 to 1994. He was incredibly smart, but also his government was very corrupted. And the election in which he supposedly won, there were thousands of places where 100% of the population went to vote that day and nobody got sick and 100% of the people voted for him. It is funny because it was a major fraud. So if I were a reporter in Mexico, I wouldn't have been able to ask those questions. But after he left power and I had the chance to talk to him, I confronted him with the fact that he made a huge fraud to become president. He made another huge fraud to decide who was going to be the next president after him, because many Mexican journalists cannot do that. More than 80 journalists, reporters, have been killed in Mexico. And I always wonder what would have happened to me had I stayed in Mexico City.
Well, I'm glad we're taping him because I don't know what else to say.
Finish with a personal question, Bill. What would you tell yourself to your own Bill Finnegan when you were 25?
Can I steal that?
I'll use it too. You know, at 57, I think I would tell him to slow down a little bit. I lived so intensely for the last 30, 35 years in this country that I don't know how to stop. Now I realize that I should have enjoyed a little bit more certain moments in my life. But I think I didn't know how to do that. You know, there's a beautiful sign that I kept with me for a long time that said, "It's only television." And those of us who work on TV sometimes think that television is the most important thing in life. Well, what I would tell him is that don't be stupid. That's not the most important thing in life.
That was Jorge Ramos, co-anchor at Univision. I'm William Finnegan, and this is the New Yorker Radio Hour.